Okay, we'll call the EMWD Board of Directors meeting to order, that being February the 6th, a little after 9 a.m. Director Record, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
You have to. Please join me in a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, this is the time and the place for any subject and public comments within the jurisdiction of EMWD that is not on today's agenda. And if there is, we have one speaker today, but it's not as a public comment. It's for an item on the agenda. With that, we'll go to agenda item number two, which is the recognitions, a proclamation of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District in recognition of Matthew J. Berger, recognizing his promotion to Brigadier General in April.
Good morning. This proclamation is from the board to recognize the recent promotion of March Air Reserve Base Commander Matthew Berger to the rank of Brigadier General. As you know, Commander Berger has been a key advocate for EMWD in our efforts to advance regional projects that will create a more sustainable and high-quality water supply for residents in Western Riverside County. As an example, just last week, Commander Berger submitted a letter of support for our groundwater grant application through Prop 1. So, unfortunately, he could not be here today to receive the proclamation in person, but we will make arrangements to get it to him.
April.
Sounds good. Good working relationship, and it's appropriate. I'll move that item.
Been moved. Anybody second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Polly absent at this point. Agenda item three, the first public hearing is number A, which is a public hearing to adopt two proposed resolutions of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District in connection with the annexation of certain territory to Communities of Facilities District number 2003-25, which is Pacific Communities Improvement Area. Charles.
Great. So we just need to declare a public hearing open. So as long as it's declared. So the CFD number 2003-25 Improvement Area C, so Pacific Communities, was established in 2005 to finance Eastern Municipal Water District water and sewer facility cost in lieu of fees and facility improvements. The CFD, which consists of 199 single-family detached homes, is located in the city of Moreno Valley, south of Iris Avenue and east of LaSalle Street. Special tax bonds were issued in 2013 and 2017 for a total principal amount of $5,450,000. After funding all eligible developer reimbursement requests, the CFD has remaining funds eligible for reimbursement. EMWD received a signed petition by LCTH Investment LP, a subsidiary of PAC Homes, requesting that the board consider amending the boundary of CFD number 2003-25 Pacific Communities Improvement Area C in order to annex 38 parcels into the existing CFD and utilize the funds. LCTH Investments LP is the sole landowner of the proposed annex parcels. On December 19, 2018, the board adopted resolution number 2018-152, declaring its intention to conduct proceedings for the annexation of 38 lots into improvement area C for CFD number 2003-25. The parcels within the proposed annexation area will be assessed special taxes based on the rate and method of apportionment for the existing CFD. This amendment will be beneficial to the existing property owners within CFD number 2003-25 Improvement Area C by providing additional revenue to be applied towards debt service of the outstanding bonds. The board has received and reviewed the Community Facility District Report for the CFD prepared by Webb Municipal Finance, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing.
Okay, I would ask the Secretary of the Board how this meeting was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on January 29, 2019 in the Press Enterprise
a newspaper circulated within the CFC boundary in accordance with the Mellow Roos Community Facilities Act of 1982.
Okay, I would ask if the Secretary of Board has received any written protest to the proposal. I would ask her to provide copies thereof to the Board.
No written protest to the proposal have been received.
Thank you. At this time, are there any members of the public who wish to speak on this matter? Seeing no cards, if so, please come forward to the podium, just in case anybody was late. At this time, we are ready to approve the following resolution. Resolution authorizing the annexation of certain territory to Improvement Area C of CFD number 2003-25, Pacific Communities, of Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of special taxes and calling an election thereof. I will accept a motion and a second to adopt this resolution.
I move approval.
I'll second.
Okay. The resolution that we have just adopted authorizes the annexation, or I'm sorry, we need to vote.
Chair, we need to vote.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauly absent. The resolution that we have just adopted authorizes the annexation of territory, authorizes a levy of special taxes, and calls for a bond election within the proposed annexation area of Improvement Area C of CFD number 2003-25, which is to be held at this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for Improvement Area C of Community Facilities District number 2003-25, Pacific Communities of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the election has now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against the proposition, was unanimous in favor of the proposition.
Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of the voting of this proposition, I will entertain a motion to adopt.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauly absent. This concludes the public hearing. We will now return to the next item on the agenda. Agenda item 3B. This is the time and place set for a duly noticed public hearing regarding the proposed amendment to the facilities authorized to be financed through Improvement Area A and Improvement Area B of Community Facilities District number 2017-77, known as La Bontana, of Eastern Municipal Water District to include the addition of school improvements to be owned and operated by the Paris Union High School District. The Board has previously adopted Resolution 2018-154, declaring its intention to consider the approval of the addition of the school improvements. I declare this public hearing open and would ask for a staff report on this proposed action.
Certainly. So the MWD has received a signed petition from JVRL 220 LLC. It's owned by James A. Lytle and Ronald J. Hartley, requesting that the Board consider amending CFD number 2017-77, La Ventana, in order to finance school improvements. JVRL 220 LLC is the sole landowner within the CFD. On December 19, 2018, the Board adopted Resolution 2018-154, declaring its intention to consider an amendment to the facilities of this CFD and authorizing the finance on behalf of Improvement Areas A and B to include school improvements. This amendment will not change the amount of special taxes within the CFD or the estimated par amount of the bonds. CFD number 2017-77 will remain in compliance with the MWD's comprehensive debt policy, including an overlapping tax rate at or below 2% at the time of the bond sale. With the adoption of Resolution 2018-154, the Board also approved a joint community facilities agreement by and among EMWD, Paris Union High School District, and JVRL 220 relating to the CFD, which will serve to facilitate the financing and the school improvements through the CFD. These school improvements will be owned and operated by Paris Union High School District. This project is planned for 261 homes within Improvement Area A and 250 homes within Improvement Area B for a total of 511 individual homes, and is located east of Menifee in an unincorporated area of Riverside County, south of Garbani Road, east of El Centro Lane, and west of Leon Road. The board has received and reviewed a community facility district report for the CFD prepared by Webb Financial, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing. I also just wanted to comment that the within the staff report, it also includes that the JCFA agreement as well as the CFD report. The CFD report lists out the facilities and the costs associated with the CFD. The principal purpose of the CFD was to finance water and sewer infrastructure, and that remains the case. The CFD is formed for that purpose. What this action is being requested is to amend the Joint Community Facilities Agreement with the school district to allow for the CFD to also fund the school infrastructure program. This allows the school to not have to form their own overlapping CFD and go through the process of going through that formation, having additional costs. Instead, they can enter into a JCFA with Eastern, and then we would have proceeds available to fund that program. So it's not taking away any monies for the water or sewer infrastructure. It's just complementing it with also allowing the school district to be able to, in a word, piggyback from our financing and be able to do that in an expeditious manner. So with that, that's the staff report.
Okay. I would ask the Secretary of the Board now, how was this hearing noticed?
Notice of the public hearing was published on January 29, 2019 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Mellow Roof Community Facilities Act of 1982.
I would ask the Secretary of the Board, have you received any written protest to the proposal? I would ask her to provide copies thereof to the Board.
No written protest to the proposal has been received.
Okay. Okay, or protests have been received from any of the property owners or residents of CFD number 2017-77 improvement area. Thank you. For at this time, are there any members of the public who wish to speak on this matter? If so, please come forward to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and present your comments. And we have one from Grant Beckland, who resides at 30811 Garbani Road, Winchester. Thank you.
Good morning. Yes, I'm an adjacent neighbor to this CFD proposal, and I'm not opposed to it. I'm just looking for some information. I prepared an exhibit. Particular CFD is of great benefit to my property and my neighbors. It's providing sewer service to provide for the tract and for the school. And presently, my neighbor and I live to the north of this project. We are going to join the development world. We live on 5 acres now, but it's going away. So in order to do that, I will need sewer service through Eastman to do that. I've applied for a will-serve letter with the staff. They mentioned that this project is going forward. My questions are, is there anything being done here that precludes me from tying to Eastern sewer system? Once this gets built, I know I'll have to pay fees on the balance, but this is the only practical way to get sewer service to this project. The other thing that's not part of this, but it's a second question, is there is also a proposed enlargement of the line in Rickard to the west of us that's upsizing from a 12 to 15. And I think that's due to the lack of capacity in that 12-inch line that needs to be upsized. So there's kind of two questions in it. But I really don't want to proceed with the development and then find out I'm constrained not being able to tie this Eastern system. So that's my question.
Joe? Sure. Go ahead.
I was just...
Sorry. Joe?
Yeah, Mr. President, if I can maybe assist with a response. We'd be more than pleased to sit down with you, sir, to go through the details of your property.
Okay.
On the face of it, based on what you described, I don't see an issue mm-hmm. in connecting to the sewer. You are correct in that the downstream sewer will need to be upsized. That will not be required until further down the road, meaning when there's a large number of EDUs or equivalent dwelling units that have been already connected to the system. The system does have currently sufficient capacity to accommodate the first phases of the proposed development. It's only in latter years that we would need to upsize it.
Okay.
Incidentally, we are finalizing an agreement with the La Ventana development, and that will be brought to the board in March timeframe for consideration. But aside from that, I'll give you my contact information. I'd be more than happy to sit down with you and talk about the particulars.
Okay, great. And just for reference, my project would be 45 lots compared to the 500 plus the high school. So it's not.
Is there an easement area for you to maintain a connection?
Correct. Through the entitlement process, I obtained an easement from my property into the La Ventana tract or sewer and water systems to connect to eastern systems.
So is that a recorded easement or is that just a deed?
Just
for the record, Grant had called me once before.
The way the La Ventana project was originally designed, there was an open space easement that precluded me from connecting to a public sewer and public street. Through the negotiation process, I was granted an easement that has not recorded yet, but the settlement agreement sets up the mechanism that they will give me an easement once it's defined. So I do have access to future public streets and eastern system.
And again, we'll work through those particular issues, but I don't see any significant issue there in working with you to connect your future development.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're satisfied?
Yeah. Sorry, I would just ask Joe, typically when we work with a developer, they're master sizing, right?
Yes.
The lines and the lift station to accommodate whatever area you think will ultimately drain or connect to that.
That's correct. And the district will oversize the development required sizing of the sewer. We will typically oversize that to accommodate the land use that will ultimately develop that will benefit from that facility.
Okay, so if you meet with Mr. Beckland, then you'll kind of verify that.
That's correct.
Great.
Okay.
And so you would have one more bite at the apple when it comes back.
I'll put that on my calendar.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Seeing no further speakers, I hereby declare the public hearing closed. At this time, we are ready to approve the following resolution. The resolution reads as approving an amendment to the authorized facilities for each improvement area A and B of CFD number 2017-77, which is La Ventana, of Eastern Municipal Water District, and calling elections thereon. I will accept a motion and a second to adopt this resolution.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauley absent. The resolution that we have just adopted approves the amendment to the facility CFD number 2017-77 is authorized to finance for each improvement area A and B to include school improvements and calls for special elections wherein improvement area A and B improvement area B of CFD number 2017-77, which are to be held at this time by the Secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the elections for Improvement Area A and Improvement Area B of Community Facilities District Number 2017-77, La Ventana of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the elections have now been closed. The results of said election for Improvement Area A, which includes the number of votes cast for and against Proposition A of Improvement Area A, were unanimous in favor of the proposition. The results of said election for Improvement Area B, which includes the number of votes cast for and against Proposition A of Improvement Area B, were also unanimous in favor of the proposition.
Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of the voting on the propositions, I will entertain a motion to adopt.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And this concludes the public hearing. We will now return to the next item on the agenda. Thank you for your patience on this one. This we're kind of doing this one for a while. Okay. Next agenda item is the executive reports. Nothing from Laura?
We've got a couple items of interest. As you probably all noticed, it's been raining a little bit lately, last week or so. So that's actually really good news. It's doing wonders for our water supply. But it's also had the effect of really curtailing our demand on recycled water. So all our recycled water ponds are right at the brim at this point in time. And as of Monday, we began discharging recycled water first time in quite some time here. We started off with about 16 MGD from the Temecula plant, ramped that up to about 40 million gallons a day with flow from the Paris Valley plant. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We anticipate that we'll continue to do that for the next couple of 3 weeks. We monitor it, obviously, daily, but at this point in time, there's very little demand for recycled water. So we'll continue to monitor that, and we'll back off as we need to. The other good news is with the rain, we've been able to divert about 800-plus acre-feet from the San Jacinto River into our recharge ponds at Grant Street. So, any questions on that? That's kind of the current situation. The other item I wanted to share with you, again, as you're all aware, we've been reaching out to a number of the property owners in the rural Menifee area, 43 lots that have wells on their properties that have gone dry or beginning to dry up, and we've been reaching out with them. Charles Turner and Joe Muad have been presenting a potential solution in providing eastern water service to those lots. We've been asking them to submit letters of interest as to whether they would be interested in moving forward in developing a program which ultimately would increase property taxes to pay for the water services. There's 43 lots. There's a deadline as of a couple of days ago for letters of interest to be submitted. We only received 6 letters of interest to move forward. So at this point in time, it does not look like that there is sufficient support to move forward and implement the improvements. Ultimately, we require a vote of those owners of the properties and require a 2/3 approval. So we're nowhere close at this point in time. So with that, we will be circling back around with those residents and the city and sharing with them the level of interest that's been received, but we don't anticipate anything moving forward at this point.
Thank you, Nick. I think just for the board's notice that this was tried in 1999, pretty much before DVL went in, and they had problems. And wanted to do something on a larger area. I was not a member of the board at the time, but I was around, and this is the second time that it's happened, and it seems to get progressively worse. And so we just want to make some, since we have really had a nice outreach from the district with both the residents and the city, that we want to write a letter back saying that we have been after this, and there's been proposals made before, so it kind of protects Eastern and the city for any future issues that might arise.
Following up.
Thank you. Joe.
Just one item, Mr. President. Next week, on Wednesday, February 13th, we have scheduled a community outreach meeting for the Paris 2 desalter project. The meeting will be held at our existing desalination complex. We will share with the neighbors and the community our plans to go forward with construction. We will also have a representative from Kiewit at the meeting, as well as our construction management team will be there to answer any questions that may come up.
Great. Look forward to it. Jeff?
Nothing for me.
How are we doing with the odor control on Paris?
So we continue the cleaning activities on the main large diameter pipeline that heads toward Marina Valley or brings flow from north Paris down to the plant. Actually, Jason Baird here leads that effort. He's our manager for collection services. Matt's done a lot of work on looking at the odors within the plant and what we can do to try to make that system function better. And I personally noticed some improvement, but part of that's also the colder weather. We're monitoring the odors in the sewer upstream, and I think we're collecting data all the way up to just south of Ramon Expressway, about half a mile south, and seeing what we might be able to do to kind of minimize the impact on the wastewater plant. One idea that's been thrown out there that we're starting to explore is to ship or transport centrate, which is very high in ammonia, from the Marina Valley plant down a line that would hit this large diameter gravity sewer. It's ammonia, so it would help us with the odor issues. So I thought that was a great idea. We've also retained the services of Brown and Caldwell to help us look at the media at the biofilter itself and look at possible future alternatives using possibly an engineered media. Generally, that's a very costly option, but you get a much longer life out of the media. So a lot of balls in the air right now, but we're actively working on it.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we'll move to item number 5, which is the consent calendar. We'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items A through H, unless anyone wants anything pulled.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauly absent. Agenda item 6 is the action calendar number A. Approve and authorize an agreement with Jacobs for $605,400. For the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Digester Gas Beneficial Use, Preliminary and Final Design, and Appropriation in the amount of $787,600. Eric.
Good morning.
Morning.
The topic is the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Digester Gas Beneficial Use Project. As mentioned, this is an award contract for professional services for preliminary final design. Presentation includes the background, selection process that we used to identify the proposed candidate for the project, the scope of work that they'll perform, the schedule for the project, and the recommendation. Back in 2017, the district conducted a digester gas beneficial use study for all 4 regional water reclamation facilities. Under that study, we identified a couple of uses for digester gas, including purifying gas for conveyance into the SoCal gas line, using digester gas to run IC engines to drive gensets, or flaring the gas. The result of that study indicated that each site should go and undergo its own unique evaluation, but one of the principal things that came out of that was a desire to disconnect the use of digester gas with engines driving process blowers. Process blowers are a critical part of the process for the facility. The changing requirements for use of digester gas was a risk, and we're trying to disconnect that risk from the treatment plant process. At the Temecula site, which is the balance of this presentation is focused on, we're currently advancing a project to replace the engines that drive process blowers with electric motors. And this is being driven by APMD's Rule 1110.2. For us to comply with that rule, our strategy is to basically replace those engines. Under this project, we are advancing a project to continue the use of digester gas, but to convert that use from the current engine location for blowers to the tertiary open pump station. And this project also addresses the loss of heat that was being provided by the blowers, blower engines. So under the blower electrification project, we are removing the existing digester gas engine-driven blowers. These blowers are equipped with heat jackets and heat recovery systems, and that was heat that was being provided for stabilizing biosolids on site. As consequence, we are going to be adding a new standby natural gas boiler. This boiler augments the existing natural gas boiler on site, and we require redundancy of heat service to provide stability of service for stabilization of solids. As part of this project, we're also going to design a new digester gas line that will convey digester gas from the current location where we have a high-pressure sphere to the tertiary outlet pump stations. And we'll also have to enhance the pretreatment of digester gas to be able to support the use of new and emerging emission control systems that will be implemented at the TEPS. This diagram shows the major components of this project, and specifically the components that will be designed by this consultant. On the right is an aerial photograph that has several items identified on it. On the left is two circles. There's several lines that are crossing the site that are shown in the legend. And then on the top right, there is a blue square which represents the location of the tertiary effluent pump station. Focusing on the two circles on the left side of that diagram, on the first one is the location where we plan to improve the digester gas pretreatment system. What's needed is to enhance this treatment system by removing slot sands. This involves installing a adsorbent media that will actually remove slot sand from the digester gas. And this area is pretty straightforward, but it is a complex site. There's a lot of existing facilities on site. And this is requires a little bit of care in the design of this, and this is also a chemical process that requires specialized knowledge. The second circle that's there is the location where we intend to install a new boiler. The call out and the diagram shows a canopy structure and a pad for the installation location for this boiler. That's existing. It was always intended to enhance the location with a new boiler to augment the single boiler that's on site. What you see in the photograph is a green boiler that's being provided. That's the new boiler as well as the new recirculation pump. This needs to be provided on an expedited basis to be able to support maintaining the stability of service during the winter season that follows the removal of the electric blower, the digester gas driven engine blowers. Going back to the aerial image on the right, you'll see that we have several pathways to provide a digester gas line current high-pressure sphere location to the tertiary effluent pump station. It's actually fairly simple to design a digester gas conveyance line. The challenge is not the digester gas line, but the site. The site has three operating treatment plants on it. They've been constructed in a series of campaigns, and it's very difficult to find a pathway that does not present an obstacle for construction. And as you see, this diagram has proposed four pathways. The consultant that prepared this diagram actually has been involved in the site and is very familiar with the site. And their solution is to evaluate each of these pathways and identify the best pathway with the least resistance and the best value for the district. With regards to the selection process for the consultant, our process essentially involves identifying a selection committee that comprised of engineering and operations and regulatory folks as well to ensure that all aspects of the project are being considered. We review proposals and we rank them. We're looking primarily at their approach, their team, their schedule. We do not open the fee envelopes until we rank the consultants. In this particular case, We ranked Jacobs and Hazen & Sawyer fairly close. Black & Veatch was ranked third. All three firms are very good firms. They had very good staff. What differentiated Jacobs and Hazen was that both firms have been working at the Temecula site. They're very familiar with the challenges on the site. When we opened up the fee envelope, we did notice that Black & Veatch had a lower fee. But our opinion, and in subsequent discussions with the consultants, is that the fee presented by Jacobs and Hazen & Sawyer was based on their knowledge of the site. Black & Veatch has not been involved in the design of projects on that site and didn't have the same level of background on the project. And I think that's what was borne out in the review of their proposals and looking at their approach and the team that they had proposed. With regards to Jacobs' proposal, Jacobs being the firm that was identified as to be recommended for this project by the selection committee, their scope of services does include the preliminary and final design of the project, as well as a condition assessment of the heat loop that's going to be in place after we augment the heat system with a new boiler. And it also includes services through bidding at this point in time. The schedule for this project, we're a little bit optimistic in the schedule because we have January shown for Board of Work, but today is February, and if we adjust that, we're looking at proceeding in February with this project and hopefully complete the boiler design package in July and August to be able to allow the bid and construction of that by the end of the year, and then to advance the completion of the remaining component of the project in the second quarter of 2020 and advance that towards construction. The recommendation is an agreement with Jacobs for the preliminary and final design of the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility, the Digester Gas Beneficial Use Project in $605,400. Administrative award and execution by general manager of contracts necessary to complete the design. We do believe that there will be some additional support needed for potholing on the site, considering there's a lot of utilities that we'll need to identify. Appropriation of $787,600 to fund the project through the bid phase. And I'm available for any questions that you may have at this time.
I have a question. So the big problem with this thing is it's all underground. You've got lots of
correct
problems.
And most of the pathways are in utility quarters for putting this in. Even on other projects that we're working on right now, we face substantial challenges in trying to find open pathways across the site. Mm-hmm. And this one happens to be a fairly long run crossing several challenging locations.
And you're running gas? You're running not a water line or anything? You're
correct.
Gas. This is maybe a dumb question. Is there any thought to just running it up in the air? Running it to avoid all that?
That's a good question. I think that when you look at the pathway that we've got, we also have several roadways that we have to cross. And trying to avoid future complications, trying not to have an additional challenge for this line, we've preferred to go below grade. We can definitely look at above grade portions to simplify this during the design. There are several roadways that we cannot go above without constructing a bridge, which would be in a greater expense than we're proposing right now.
I would add that recently we did award a design-build contract for the Temecula plant to replace a deteriorated airline, and portions of that will be constructed above grade, including a road crossing. That project is a critical project to have completed in a very quick manner because of the failing airline. So where there are those opportunities where we could advance a project in a simpler fashion by going above grade, we will definitely look at those opportunities.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions of Eric and staff?
No.
Okay.
Mr. President, I would really like to just take a moment to recognize Eric. He's been responsible for numerous very complex capital improvement projects, particularly over the last year. He's just done an excellent job. I'm sure I'll get a sense of his technical capabilities, but he's also very good at managing projects and ensuring they keep moving forward. Just done an excellent job, so I want to recognize him for that.
Thank you, Judge. For sure.
Okay, we'll approve.
One second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauley absent. Item number C, approve and authorize an award of contract with Pacific Hydrotech Corporation for $1,531,800 under specification number 13475, which is the Winchester Lift Station Odor Control Project, and an additional appropriation of $2,002,000. Mark. $2,002,000. Oh, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm ready for it, though.
Okay. Let me restate. Item B, I was jumping ahead. Okay, approve and authorize agreements with CDM Smith for the Purified Water Replenishment Program and Title 22 Engineering Reports, which amounts to $259,890 for the brine concentration pilot project, and that sum would be $392,445, and an appropriation in the amount of $784,070. Sorry, Mark. Thank you.
Good morning again. Yes, again, you've covered essentially the overall general items here for this project for our Purified Water Replenishment Program. There are two contracts we will be considering for this board support. Just a quick agenda here, overview of our Groundwater Reliability Plus program, which the board is familiar with, and we'll get into a little bit of the details about our Purified Water Replenishment Project. We're going to cover the scope of the program and Title 22 engineering reports. We'll also look at our brine concentration pilot project and give you the background on that, and talk about the schedule and the recommendations for consideration. Again, just the little bit of background on our groundwater reliability plus program. The objective again is to bring in new source of raw water and recycled water from advanced facilities and recharge basins for increasing our overall groundwater recharge into our upstream central basin. Again, it's also taken into consideration our existing sources of water, which are currently part of our Saboba settlement recharge projects. And then again, the new sources that we're looking at is our two components of water banking program, which is again bringing imported raw water through our future new Metropolitan Water District connection, and then our purified water replenishment project, which includes an IPR project, which is an advanced treated water treatment facility using reverse osmosis, and then also blending that water with our existing supplies of tertiary treated recycled water. Again, the benefits for our Groundwater Reliability Plus program, again, is ultimately to improve our overall salinity levels in our groundwater basins, and the IPR and the raw water projects will be able to do that. And ultimately, it's going to be able to essentially increase the groundwater levels within our basins and improve those conditions. It'll ultimately increase our water supplies for the groundwater and essentially help reduce our reliance on imported water supplies. And again, this is it's been implemented in collaboration with the Water Master and our settlement agreements. And there'll be plenty of benefits for our local participating agencies and also those who are not participating in this specific program, but because of the basin improvements that are occurring because of this project, it'll help the entire region. Just an overview briefly on the schematic here, again, of our overall GWR Plus program. Again, we have existing recharge sources that are coming in currently and are recharging our ponds and providing groundwater supplies to our basin. The water banking program, which is in the process right now with a couple projects that are currently in design. Our Mountain Avenue Recharge Pond program is going to be essentially going to be released very soon for construction. We're in design of our raw water pipeline and the EM25 connection for our MET connection for that supply source. Those are in design right now. And so this project is for our tertiary, the PWR portion is tertiary recycled water and the PWR replenishment water, which will come, essentially will be built to supply additional recharge water, which will ultimately receive additional treatment through our soil aquifer process, and it will essentially be pulled from the basin through groundwater wells and ultimately will reach our customers through our distribution system. This program has been, the IPR portion of our program has been in process for quite a while now, since back in 2014. It was our phase one study that was prepared to essentially look at the alternatives that we have available to us to develop this IPR project. It looked at various components of what would be required to actually implement this type of project. We then moved on further and looked up again and refined the efforts back in 2016 to look at the original study, look at additional groundwater modeling, and essentially embark and look at it overall detailed look at our groundwater modeling conditions and how it affects our pressure zone and the management zone. Looked at nutrient balance in the basin, and then also ultimately what would be the ultimate approach of how we would deliver this project. And we did receive funding for that effort back in 2016. In 2017, we awarded a contract with CDM Smith to prepare the preliminary design report and look at also essentially all of the facilities that are necessary for essentially developing the project. And brine management associated with that, because of the purification process, the RO process producing the brine, we needed to come up with an approach to deal with the brine and the brine discharge. So that was also a focus of that effort, and also ultimately to further refine the actual program costs. In 2018, after meeting with regulatory agencies regarding the State Water Board and Division of Drinking Water regarding the models that we had prepared, we received good input from the State Board on how we were going about it, and we determined that it was necessary to refine our model to make sure we were going to comply with the groundwater recharge regulations that they ultimately will be approving or reviewing with us. So CDM Smith also is currently performing additional groundwater modeling right now that has was brought back to the board this past year. So now we move on to this next phase here of this project development and implementation. And this portion here is to move on to what we're calling our program and our Title 22 engineering report preparation. So the program report component of this effort here is to essentially gather all the data that we've collected. We've prepared the preliminary design report. We have a lot of information on the overall facilities now that we've gotten to this point. And ultimately, we're going to prepare a more comprehensive project description of what we plan to do in terms of developing this project further and taking it into the next phase of which will ultimately be a final design effort. But first, we have to get through this process by developing the program report, which will feed into our next step, which will be the CEQA process, which is developing an EIR for this effort. So it will define, it will provide the project description, the full comprehensive project description, but also feed into our Title 22 engineering report as part of defining the overall scope of what we are going to be preparing for this effort. And also it will be used for our public outreach efforts. So it will essentially provide that background that we can then go out to our customers and to our stakeholders and explain what we are planning to do moving forward. So this scope for this effort will also include this Title 22 engineering report, which is essentially the regulatory component of our project. This will be essentially for complying with the groundwater recharge regulations that are defined by state boards, Division of Drinking Water. So that report will ultimately need to be approved by them for this project. There'll be preparation of a report of waste discharge, again, CEQA coordination with our future CEQA consultants that we bring on board, and of course, all the management that goes along with this effort. So we, similar to what Eric had explained earlier, as far as the selection process we go through, we do go through a fairly detailed selection process and evaluation process. We sent out a request for proposal last year to 8 different firms. We ultimately received three proposals, and the panel consisted of our environmental and regulatory compliance group, operations, and engineering, and then we went through the evaluation criteria that's shown there on the schematic to essentially assess and rank those firms. Shown here, the selection committee selected or ranked CDM Smith as the number one consultant for this effort. Again, CDM Smith was competitively selected way back in 2017 for the preliminary design report. They had a lot of background, a lot of information on the effort, but they ultimately put together the best proposal. We thought that it was very strong. They had a good understanding of what we needed, what was required for this program and this Title 22 report, and they essentially ranked the highest. Their fee was the lowest, fortunately, and we believe that was primarily because of they've already completed quite a bit of this work. They're very knowledgeable. They've already prepared the preliminary design report. They understand the modeling situation, and they understand the brine issues that we're going to be dealing with. So they essentially came with a very good fee. So they have a solid sub-consultant with DDB Engineering of Irvine, so they'll be supporting that preparation of the reports. So the staff's recommendation is to award the contract to CDM Smith for the and Title 22 engineering report preparation. The next project that is for consideration here is our brine concentration pilot project engineering services. And similar to what you've seen previously of what we're doing over at our Menifee and Paris Windows, we're currently doing a pilot project there to look at trying to increase our brine recovery from that facility to minimize brine discharge ultimately to our entire brine line. And so we purchased a Desalitech closed circuit reverse osmosis unit that essentially is going to be taking and testing our brine for recovery to try to maximize the amount of brine recovery we can get from that facility. And so this technology that we are testing at Menifee Paris 1, ultimately which may be a future regional brine management facility, that technology can be directly applicable to a recycled water advanced type of facility.
It's very similar to what we're already doing in terms of our conventional reverse osmosis. We're doing a three-stage type of conventional RO process, which is going to give us what we estimate to be somewhere about 92 to 92.5% recovery, all said and done. So this technology, the Detalitech technology, is we are looking at potentially raising that recovery to upwards of 96-97%. So that's almost cutting our brine in half. So that's a significant impact to how we would manage the brine and the actual quantities and volumes of brine that we would manage, not only in this first phase, but also future phases. So the potential for this technology is very positive for us. So this project was to develop a pilot project protocol and actually go out and take that Celtech unit when we're done testing at Menifee and bring it over to San Jacinto and set it up there. We would need a pretreatment system for it in front of the reverse osmosis, because what we'll be doing is taking tertiary recycled water, which will still have some particulate matter in it, so we need to remove the particulates so that the RO can then remove the salts. So this pilot project was, we essentially put together the requirements for this, which will include developing the ultrafiltration equipment procurement documents, and the consultant would also provide construction oversight, and they'd provide startup and commissioning. And ultimately, we would essentially make sure that we were going to be able to coordinate from a regulatory standpoint the use of this technology for future AVT facilities. So the proposed consultant is CDM Smith. CDM Smith, as I mentioned, has been along for the entire process here with our project. They actually helped also put together an application for our Metropolitan Water District Future Supply Actions Grant. So they did a great job. We do have a representative from CDM Smith, Linnea Bowles, here. She was part of that activity, and she's been part of the project for most of the way. And so we negotiated a scope and fee with CDM Smith to do this pilot project in the amount of $392,445. And we felt this was a full comprehensive effort to essentially take our pilot, run the pilot efforts. They'll be involved in the operations of it also and gathering data. And ultimately they'll prepare a report which will give us the results of the facility and whether we should incorporate this RO process into our future project. And it would essentially serve as a primary reverse osmosis technology that we'd apply, which would ultimately give us increased recovery for brine. Yeah, so our recommendation is to have CDM perform that work. Our schedule that we're looking at here, again, we're currently now, we've completed the preliminary design report. The schedule will be that by January 2020, we would complete the Title 22 report. We would pilot the Desalitech unit essentially through July 2020, and then ultimately we expect to have our CEQA permitting completed by September of 2020, and final design anticipated for end of 2021, and ultimately construction we're looking at October 2023 for the overall project. So staff recommendations here. First item is for the CDM Smith PWR program and Title 22 injury report in the amount of $260,000. The second item would be for also for the CDM Smith contract for the brine concentration pilot project in the amount of $392,000. And then also the third item, the appropriation of $784,070 to fund all related consulting work associated with these two projects. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you have any questions to staff? Okay.
Hearing none, we'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauly absent. Agenda item C, which is to approve and authorize an award of contract with Pacific Hydrotech Corporation for $1,531,800 under specification number 13475, which is the Winchester Lift Station Odor Control Project, with an additional appropriation of $2,002,000. Mark.
Okay. Thank you.
Some background here on the Winchester Lift Station project. Again, this facility was built back in 1997, and back then when it was constructed, it was essentially surrounded by agricultural area. And over time, again, track developments within the area, the Winchester area, have essentially started to develop. And so this facility, which is located at the intersection of La Ventana and Olive Avenue, has been in operation since then. And with the future development that's planned to occur very soon, we'll eventually have customers or residents essentially butted up right next to our facility. So the need for an odor control structure or an odor control facility was deemed appropriate for this facility. So this project is to address that situation. So similar to what we have previously recently constructed over at our Sun City lift station facility, so this process was essentially to bring in a activated carbon absorption system to be installed at the Winchester lift station facility to essentially deal with the odors that are coming from the wet well facility. So we would essentially seal the wet well and be able to pull all air from that wet well facility and bring it over to the activated carbon treatment process and essentially deal with the potential odors there. There is space we laid out for any future as flows increase over time. There may be a need for a future and an enhanced treatment process, which would be a future bio-treatment filter, which is what we currently have at the Sun City facility. But at this point, our consultants and staff determined that an activated carbon treatment system is appropriate for the volumes of air that we'll be treating and handling for this process. So bids were prepared. We received 18 general contractors attended the pre-bid construction meeting back in December. We did receive 8 bids, fortunately, back in January, on January 10th. And so Pacific Hydrotech was the low responsive bidder in the amount of $1.531 million. And we had a good spread, although we felt this was a good price on the project, and all the other contractors that submitted were fairly close to the range that we're looking at. There was a good spread on this, but we were under our engineer's estimate of $1.7 million, so we thought that this was a good bid, and Pacific Hydrotech has done work for us in the past, and they're a good contractor, so we feel very comfortable that they will be able to successfully perform this project. So schedule-wise, we're looking at award the contract in February. We would essentially begin immediately and mobilize by May this year, and we anticipate a substantial completion by February 2020. The recommendation is to award a contract with Pacific Hydrotech in the amount of $1.53 million, and also to award, as part of the project, for the consultant that performed the design for this, the engineer of records, Black & Veatch. So we felt that they were the appropriate firm to continue with the project through construction to provide engineering services during construction. So we negotiated a fee in the amount of $120,000 to essentially perform that work. So we would request award of contract to Black & Veatch for that amount. And then an additional, award of contracts necessary to complete the overall construction project. And then that would require an additional appropriation of $2,000, which brings up the total estimated project cost at $2.3 million. We have to answer any questions.
Any questions to staff? If not, entertain a motion.
I move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauley absent. What are the board wants? You want to take a 10-minute break, or you want to finish up and adjourn?
Let's finish. Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you want to take a break, Ron.
No, I don't need to take a break.
I'm fine.
Okay.
Let's go.
Give everybody an opportunity here. Next is information items, and we're going to hear about the federal issues update.
Good morning, again.
April.
Every year we have our lobbyists come to present an update on the state and federal issues for the board. Generally, we like to have both of those groups present at the same meeting. However, as you know, there are some important issues going on in Sacramento today. So with us today are our federal advocates. We have Pete Evich and Jeff Bowman from Vance Voigt Associates. They're here to provide a brief update for the board.
Great. Welcome, Pete.
Welcome, President Sullivan, directors, Director Corona, and Director Fawson. There he is.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
He wanted a break.
I appreciate the opportunity to present to you today on behalf of Vance Voigt Associates. I'd like to acknowledge my colleague, Jeff Bowman, who has also joined me here today. I'd like to also just note that VSA has proudly been representing the district in Washington for the past 13 years now, and we've been very honored to serve in that role. The start of 2019 has obviously been a turbulent one in Washington, D.C. As we know, an impasse between the White House and Congress over U.S.-Mexico border security funding led to a history-making 35-day partial government shutdown. This ended on January 25th when the White House agreed to a three-week stopgap funding measure to allow Congress time to find a compromise that potentially all sides could agree to. That temporary funding extension ends on February 15th, which is 9 days away from now. And without a breakthrough development, the President has signaled that his next move may be to deem an emergency declaration over the situation at the southern border and shift federal money to construction to construct a barrier. If Trump takes this action, its constitutionality will be called into question with a legal challenge. Without knowing what's to come of the current congressional negotiations, another shutdown is a scenario that I believe that neither party can stomach at this point. As such, I think we can look for Trump and Congress to ultimately bring closure to the situation and sign off on a long-term spending deal to fund the remaining nine federal departments for the duration of the current fiscal year. Despite the olive branch that was extended in Trump's State of the Union speech and a call to transcend party differences, the hardened pessimist in me says that there will be a swift return to rancor in D.C. And as such, I think we can expect a two-year period which produces very few substantive legislative achievements. One area where common ground could be achieved is in the area of infrastructure. Despite President Trump not going into great detail during his State of the Union address, we do believe this is one policy area which may hold the most promise for success. The House Transportation and Infrastructure will hold its first hearing tomorrow to highlight the country's infrastructure needs and build momentum for a broad legislative package, which could be released sometime this spring. Since the federal law that funds and sets policy for the nation's surface transportation system is set to expire next year, this measure will likely serve as the core legislative vehicle to advance a larger infrastructure package. Other components, including provisions dealing with water infrastructure funding, would ultimately be folded into this bill. On the water infrastructure side, there will be an effort to reauthorize a few key Bureau of Reclamation programs, which were created as part of the 2016 WIN Act. The three key programs which have expired include a grant program for Western water storage projects, the Title 16 recycling program, and a program which funds desalinization projects. On the Senate side, we have heard water legislation is under consideration that includes language to reauthorize those three programs, but also to authorize a new reclamation-based infrastructure financing program called RIFIA. This low-interest loan program would be modeled after the EPA-administered WIFIA program. While it may take a little more time for this legislation to be introduced, Senator Feinstein is positioning herself to be the lead Democratic sponsor of this bill. On the House side, Representative Grace Napolitano will soon introduce a standalone wind Title 16 reauthorization measure, which has a very generous five-year, $500 million price tag. Unfortunately, the House and Senate will likely be at odds over the water storage grant program. Key House Democrats who now serve on the House Natural Resources Committee, such as Representative Jared Huffman of Northern California, are opposed to further funding for water storage initiatives. The hope is that a compromise will ultimately be forged and these important west-wide water programs are reauthorized sometime in this Congress. EMWD has taken a leadership role on the Title 16 portion of this effort, and Jeff and I have been working closely with key stakeholder groups and congressional offices to advance this measure. Shifting gears in regard to budget policy, the White House announced earlier this week that it will release its FY 2020 budget proposal the week of March 11th. This will formally kick off the congressional budget process for the upcoming fiscal year. However, before real progress can be made, Congress will need to come to an agreement on what's referred to as the budget caps. These are the top-level funding numbers for how much can be spent on defense and discretionary programs. Absent an agreement, funding levels would have to be severely cut as Congress would be forced to adhere to the parameters set forth in the 2010 Budget Sequestration Act, which laid out steep reductions. Sequestration is not considered a viable option for most federal lawmakers. There is also talk that after the border wall funding negotiations are put to rest, House Democrats may move to bring back earmarks on a limited or trial basis. However, it is uncertain if there is enough support in the Senate for an earmark return. We are watching this issue very closely, as a lifting of the earmark moratorium would have a direct impact on the district's federal advocacy approach. In regards to EMWD's congressional delegation, I just wanted to note that Representative Calvert, while now operating in the minority, has landed a significant assignment on the Appropriations Committee, as he was named the ranking member of the Defense Subcommittee. Importantly, though, he will continue to serve on the Energy and Water and Interior Appropriations Subcommittees in the 116th Congress. Senator Feinstein, who is also a top appropriator, will continue to serve as the ranking member of the Energy and Water Subcommittee in the Senate. Like Ken, she'll continue to play a pivotal role in California and west-wide water policy. Representatives Decano and Ruiz will have more clout just by nature of being in the House by being in the House's majority party. Ruiz serves on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which has shared jurisdiction over the EPA, as well as key statutes that govern drinking water issues. Earlier this week, President Trump announced that he is nominating David Bernhardt to be the next Secretary of Interior. Bernhardt has been serving as the acting Interior Secretary since former Secretary Zenke's resignation in December. While Bernhardt's prospects for being confirmed are good, several Democratic senators are certain to oppose his nomination. For years, Bernhardt has been pilloried from the left as a shill for corporate interest, and they will also highlight his career as a lobbyist, which included his representation of the Westlands Water District of California. Andrew Wheeler's nomination to be the next EPA administrator advanced out of the Senate EPW Committee on a party-line vote earlier this week. His nomination is now pending a Senate floor vote. Wheeler has been serving as the acting EPA administrator since Scott Pruitt stepped down in July of last year. While not a high-profile name, Wheeler has experience working at EPA dating back to the Bush 41 administration. He also worked as a top staffer on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee for over 6 years. Turning to the district's specific federal priorities, in 2018, we were pleased to help the district successfully secure $6.2 million for the Paris II Desalter project through the Army Corps of Engineers. $4.8 million is the remaining federal funding left as part of the district's original $25 million water authorization. The district will vie for that level of funding in the Army Corps' FY 2020 work plan, which, if the timeline works out on congressional appropriations, will be out later this year. So as a result of federal, state, and district funding, the Paris 2 desalter will soon be constructed. At the same time, we are assisting the district in pursuing an increase in the to the $25 million water authorization by doubling that amount to $50 million. The district formally applied for this increase last August, and we now await the release of the Army Corps' annual report in the hopes that it includes EMWD's request. Inclusion in the Corps' annual report will be the first step to securing the $50 million authorization. The second phase entails including legislative language and the next congressional water reauthorization to formalize that increase. Congress is expected to move another water package sometime in this Congress, with hearings maybe potentially starting in the fall or winter of this year. I mentioned earlier the congressional push to reauthorize the WIN Title 16 program. Additional funding for Title 16 is important for the district, as the indirect potable reuse project, which Mark had highlighted, is one of 44 eligible water recycling projects which can vie for those grant dollars. And lastly, a revised draft Waters of the U.S. rule was issued in December. While the draft rule exempts wastewater recycling structures constructed in upland, the definition of upland in the rule is not sufficient to exclude most wastewater recycling structures. If this language were finalized, EMWD's wastewater recycling structures would possibly be considered jurisdictional and be subject to further permitting. In addition to submitting public comments, which highlights the problem with EPA's draft rule regarding the wastewater recycling language, EMWD will meet with EPA officials in early April to discuss the matter. And with that, my remarks are concluded, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you very much.
Okay. Got any questions? We asked some this morning. You know, Randy?
No, just a comment. It's been a good relationship. We've been successful in D.C., and they've been a big part of that. So thanks for your work.
We appreciate that, and as I mentioned, we're very we see ourselves as honored to be representing the district back in D.C., so thank you.
Yeah. What opportunities are we going to have for with Napolitano on some brine reduction that goes with what we're doing over in San Jacinto? That,
yeah, and that
using reclaimed water, I mean, there ought to be some opportunities here that we can explore to fund some of that.
I think that project really could be part of could receive federal funding as the as part of the desalinization grant program that was created through WIN, which there was $30 million in the initial authorization. That money has, well, none of it's been awarded. It was awarded over the course of 2 years, FY18 and FY19. So that reauthorization, that authorization is exhausted. But I do think as we work to continue to reauthorize that program, that's certainly a program that I think we have to go through the Bureau process of making sure the project is technically feasible. But once that's done, it could vie for desal funding. There are only about seven desal projects in the reclamation states currently that have feasibility studies that allow them to vie for that money. So that would be a good pot for Eastern to look to for funding that project.
Yeah, I think so, because we have a pretty good track record with the Bureau, most of the stuff that we do here. So anything that we can...
I didn't get into specifically into the details on this, but it's you know, the politics are funny. You think you know, there's the water recycling, but you know, now apparently there's a number of Democrats who are opposed to the desalinization grant funding.
Even brackish, huh?
Well, it's mainly over the ocean desal.
Okay.
But they know a good portion of that goes to ocean desal. But I've talked to Senator Feinstein's office and John Watts. Senator Feinstein is absolutely committed to making sure that program is also included as part of the reauthorization. But, you know, we are looking for a House sponsor because the House is doing these rifle shot bills, where Grace is just doing the Title 16 bill. We are trying to identify a House sponsor to reintroduce a bill to reauthorize the DSAL program. So that's on our list as well.
Any questions? Jeff, you want to say anything?
What did I miss?
Try to miss the lot.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I think just really quickly, Pete mentioned the hearing tomorrow at the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. That hearing is going to lay out, I think, the chairman's priorities in terms of what he wants to get accomplished over the next 2 years. In terms of things that are of interest to Eastern Municipal Water District, the Clean Water Act State Revolving Loan Fund Program has been expired since 1994. It is a priority of Chairman DeFazio to reauthorize that program, probably at a higher level than it is being funded. Just because a program is not authorized doesn't mean it won't receive funding. It's just, without authorization, you place that program in a fairly vulnerable state. So I think Chairman DeFazio is going to push very hard on reauthorizing the SRF program. I think this could happen in a couple of different vehicles. Pete briefly mentioned a potential infrastructure package, and also Pete mentioned the willingness of Congress to stay on a 2-year Water Resources Development Act cycle. So we'll have a number of options to sort of pursue our priorities, not just on the SRF, but also on some of the Title 16 reauthorizations and desalinations. So again, thank you. We feel blessed to be able to represent you guys, and thank you for retaining us.
Thank you. All right. Okay. All right. Wastewater 7B, Wastewater Collection System GIS Based Maintenance Program. Just an update.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before I get started, we're going to talk about a new tool we implemented to help us with the collection system. But before I started, I wanted to thank Jason Beard. He's the manager of the collection system, and he really drove the whole project, so we're very thankful for that. And Mike's group in the IS department, too, were a major help in getting this initiative completed. So we really appreciate all the support. So what we wanted to talk about today is just what the collections department does, why we needed to do the project, and what it is that we actually did and what the improvements were. A lot of slides, but they should go pretty quickly. So the collections department, our mission is to provide the customers with timely collection and disposal of wastewater in a professional, cost-effective, and environmentally sound manner. So some of the examples of those duties are serving the 790,000 approximate customers as best as we can. The major focus of our department is cleaning of the sewer pipelines to prevent overflows, and what that means is on average about 780 miles per year of pipeline is cleaned, with a goal of about every 2 to 3 years trying to get through the entire system. We make repairs to the pipelines and customer lateral connections. We respond to customers' needs for their laterals and odor complaints. We inspect pipelines and manholes. We make repairs to those, raise them to grade after paving projects. We also help the mechanical crew with maintaining the lift station wet wells and cleaning them of grease and trash, as well as the water reclamation facilities. So our old method of tracking our work was based on handwritten forms and papers, Excel spreadsheets, which meant that we were duplicating work, and reporting on those activities was quite difficult due to the manual nature of the data. So we evaluated several vendors that might be able to help modernize our record keeping. And we wound up selecting a company called Mobile MMS. They were already doing quite a bit of work with the district's GIS database. They had excellent support, and they had a really great solution. So that's the company that we moved forward with. The cost is about $34,900 per year, and that allows as many district users to use the system as we like, and for all areas of district business. So we went ahead and fully implemented the system for collections, but also field services is beginning to use the system to track potable water line breaks and repairs. So the advantages of using GIS for this is that any activity we do, like cleaning, inspection, or repairs, the record of that will be tied directly to an actual asset or segment of pipe, so we can more accurately track the history of our assets. Also, we get a graphical representation of all the work that we're doing. We can pull up maps that show progress. We can see trouble spots and get a better understanding. The new system, we enter data once in the field. The staff do it from an iPad, and the data entry is done. There's no writing it on a paper form, copying to spreadsheets, copying to another report on a weekly basis. Once I'm done. Also, we'll see some examples of the reporting that we get out of it that's automated. We can very easily pull any information we like on repairs and cleaning that we've completed. Already mentioned recognition of trouble areas for cleaning and odor complaints. Another big advantage is when customers call into the IOC with a complaint, we log something and Maximo makes a work order. But it's more difficult to pull previous complaints for a same address. And this system, we can go right to the map, and in an instant, we see the entire history of one address or one customer. And the system's completely paperless, so since they're putting the data in as they go during the day, we estimate it's about 10 hours per week of staff time in record keeping. So as a whole, the new system replaces our old antiquated methods as illustrated in the photos to track our activities with a more simple electronic means of entering data and retrieving that just by using that iPad. So here are some examples of really what it looks like. These are the old maps that we use to track our progress throughout the years as we come back from the field and mark on the paper map with a marker where they had been that day. Instead of that, we now get an up-to-date view of the entire service area. And as we complete cleaning, the colors change and we get a good visual representation of how far we've come. We can also zoom in on that map and get some good detailed data as the guys are doing their work, direction of sewer flow, distance between manholes, where the manholes are supposed to be located. We can click on any individual, you can click on an individual segment or manhole, and you get all the detailed data that's in our GIS database right there with pipeline size, when it was built, what it's constructed from. So a lot of helpful information for guys in the field. Another, this is an illustration of what it looks like for lateral complaint type records. When you get down and zoomed in neighborhoods, you see where laterals are supposed to be located. And on the right-hand side, you see a record of a lateral complaint. So if we're going to an address, we can see if we've been there before, and they can bring up right there all what the previous history was, what the resolution was, or findings were during past complaints. Here's some examples of reporting that we've implemented so far. So we can see how much each crew has cleaned per month. We can see how many manholes were inspected per month by crew. We're tracking complaints for laterals and odors. And not only just tracking the complaints, but what the resolution was. Was it the customer's side of the lateral that was the issue? Was it EMWD's portion of the lateral that we're responsible for? And same thing with the odors. We get a lot of odor complaints, but many of them turn out to be something unrelated to the sewer. And we track what was our sewer and what wasn't. So when we zoom out, and rather than focus on line cleaning, we can see all the areas where we've responded for odor and lateral complaints. And we can work to filter these out and get to issues that are EMWD's problems or EMWD's responsibilities to more clearly see where those trouble areas are. And so one of the last things that this is a great benefit for is asset management. The interface includes a way, as we go through our work, to record the condition of pipelines and manholes. So this is an example for a manhole. We put the date that we were there, who made the inspection, and we can very quickly pick from drop-down lists the various problems that we might find in these manholes and pull those up later. So here is an example of one manhole's detailed inspection, complete with a photograph depicting the deterioration that had taken place. And the right-hand side is the output of the report, where we can get a list of all the manholes that we found that need rehab to quickly put together a capital project to repair them. Another handy feature is once we finish those, we can have the map provide us geographically a picture of what's going on with those manholes. So this is a tributary area to the Warm Springs lift station, which is seeing some degradation, and that's the report that we had created from that. So those were the highlights of the system that we implemented, and just wanted to share with you the work that was done, and can answer any questions you have.
I think it sounds very sophisticated, like a really great tool.
Thank you. Yeah, the staff are really enjoying it. It's made their daily work easier, and they've really engaged with using it. So,
yeah, I think it's a real plus. It also probably augments some of our blueprints where we make some repairs and it's all done by kind of where it is, a meets and bounds description, and next thing you're an as-built. You know, as-builts are not always 100% correct when you go out and do something, and everybody has to go out and pothole something. And so with this kind of data, it just supplements what we have in the system. I think it's terrific.
Exactly.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, thank you.
All right. With that, we'll accept a motion to... Motion the second for approval of items 6A through B, which is receive and file.
I'll make the motion, but I would like to make one comment.
Sure.
Reviewing the change order list, it appears that Genesis is doing pretty well there. And so a few years ago it was an issue, and hopefully it's not becoming an issue again. So I just would like staff to keep an eye on that. If you need any assistance in that regard, always happy to help.
We appreciate that. I think referring to the Redlands Hemlock Booster Station construction up in Moreno Valley, the contractor Genesis was significantly behind schedule. So we reviewed the causes of the delays, and ultimately we did assess liquidated damages in the amount of $30,000. The intent of the liquidated damages was to reimburse the district for its cost in managing and inspecting the work. I won't get into a lot of the particulars, but essentially what occurred was part of the project was to apply an anti-graffiti coating along the perimeter of the facility, and it wasn't applied properly. There was significant streaking, so we required the contract to go back, remove it, reapply it. They initially argued that it was a product, not the application. We disagreed, and we felt that irrespective of whether it's a product or application, it's their responsibility. Ultimately, they went back after about a 3 month delay, and they removed it and applied it. Then we basically wanted to be reimbursed for those delays. It was negotiated. Initially, the LDs were estimated at $1,000 a day for $56,000, but we did look at our labor cost over the course of delays, and that was a rationale for agreeing to the $30,000 at least. Ultimately, we wanted to be made whole relative to our expenses.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate the detail, but I don't always look for it. I just look for the number of guys that are repeaters on that list, so thank you. For that, I'll move the receive and file item.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Pauly absent.
Mr. Chair, if I can say, I think you misstated that you'd identify that as 6A. It's actually 8A.
8A, I'm sorry. I'm going to bring some cheers. All right. With that, we'll go to calendar review.
Nicole's out sick today, so we have Tammy.
Sure, we have Tammy.
Good morning. Good morning. I am Nicole this morning. So before you, you have the board calendar for your review. And there are a few items of interest, some events that are upcoming. We'll start with Thursday, February 21st. We have the MODOC Water Policy Forum taking place at the West and South Coast Plaza in Costa Mesa. That's from 5:30 to 8 p.m. Friday, March 29th, we have the Santa Ana River Watershed Conference, and that's taking place at Cal State Fullerton from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. And Thursday through Friday, April 4th and 5th, we have the California Water Policy Conference in San Diego. May 7th through the 10th is the Aqua Spring Conference in Monterey. And I wanted to make mention of, this came in late yesterday afternoon, Joyce sent an email reminding us to let the board be aware of a SDARC chapter meeting that's taking place in the Beaumont Cherry Valley Recreation and Park District in the city of Beaumont. That's going to be from 12 to 1:30 p.m. And a meeting notice will be sent out to the board. And I also have a flyer here which I can leave with everyone if anyone's interested. But you'll see that coming from Nicole.
Okay.
Moving on to page 2 is the board master calendar for the next couple of weeks. And we'll start with the Joint Inland Orange County Caucus meeting in Chino, Director Recker.
Yeah, I'll be phoning in for that. I've already let Joyce know.
Got it. Okay. And that's 11:30 to 1. I'll make note that you'll be calling in. Thank you. Then we have the SOPA presentation to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the City of Anaheim, Director Sullivan, Friday, February 8th from 9 to 11. We have the Met Committee and Board meetings for Director Recker, Monday, February 11th and Tuesday, February 12th. Then we have the EMWD monthly update with the General Manager in Temecula for Director Corona on Monday, February 11th from 7:30 to 8:30. EMWD in Elsinore Valley interagency meeting in Lake Elsinore for Directors Corona and Polly on Tuesday, February 12th from 3:30 to 4:30. The DVL MOI Implementation Committee for Director Record on Wednesday, February 13th from 1:30 to 3 p.m. And we'll have the Recycled Water Allocation Tracking Software meeting. Director Record, that's going to be taking place in our conference room.
Yeah, we may need to move that. I've been asked to attend a function in Englewood with Chairwoman Gray.
Okay.
So I'm not sure I can leave at 4 and get there in time for that. So.
Okay.
I'll circle back with Nicole when I know more details about that.
Sounds good. I'll give her a heads up as well. Thank you. After that, we have the Paris 2 Community Update meeting in Menifee for Director Sullivan from 5:30 to 7:30 on Wednesday, February 13th as well. Moving on to Thursday, February 14th, we have the Rancho California Water District Board meeting in Temecula for Director Corona. That's 8:30 to 10:30. EMWD update with the General Manager for Director Record from 2:30 to 3:30. Then we have the EMWD Board Planning Committee for Directors Corona and Record, 3:30 to 5 p.m. And the SOPA Commission meeting, Director Sullivan, that's Tuesday, February 19th from 9:30 to 12 o'clock. Moving on to page 3, we have the future board important dates to remember. Starting with Friday, February 22nd, Riverside County Water Task Force Speaker Series at Western in Riverside for Director Polly. And I believe you can see the rest of them. February 26th through the 28th, Aqua DC Conference. We have Director Polly and Sullivan scheduled to attend. February 28th through March 1st, the MSSC Salinity Summit in Las Vegas for Director Sullivan. March 5th, Tuesday, the Inland Empire and Orange County Water District's joint legislative reception for Director Sullivan and Paul from 5 to 7:30. March 6th, the Aqua Legislative Symposium, Director Sullivan and Paul, 9 to 4:30. April 1st and 2nd, the EMWD Federal Legislative Meetings, Director Sullivan, that's Washington. And April 1st through the 3rd, Director Sullivan, the NWRA Federal Water Issues Conference at the Embassy Suites in D.C. And finally, April 3rd, we have the EMWD Board Disclosure Obligations Training. That's going to take place also in our conference room just before the board meeting. So that will be 8:30 to 9 a.m. And from what I understand, Director Sullivan and Paul will be in D.C., of course, so we'll make note of that. And then you'll see the upcoming board meetings for the next 3 months. February's are on schedule. And take note that the March 6th has been canceled, the board meeting.
Tammy, on the 20th of this month, I need to be in Sacramento for Aqua Act Committee meeting, so I won't be able to attend that board meeting.
Okay.
And on the 20th, I may have to be at a business mediation conference.
Okay.
So we'll have to figure out if you're going to have three for a quorum.
Right. Okay.
It may move, but that's what they asked for last night. So this is court-appointed mediator for some business stuff.
Got it. Okay. Let's see what we can do on that. Thank you. And April's meetings are on schedule. But the D.C. meeting that we mentioned, the board committee meeting, make special note of Tuesday, February 5th, the admin committee meeting rescheduled. It was moved from February 7th to February 5th due to Director Polly being at Caldecell. And you'll have, it continues on page 4, the board committee meetings continue as scheduled. April 4th, the admin committee rescheduled. Looks like we're going to have to reschedule that one due to Director Sullivan. You're going to be in D.C. So we're going to look at some dates. We'll get in touch with you to reschedule that meeting as well. And the district office holiday schedule, President's Day is February 18th, so district offices will be closed. And there's a couple of flyers attached for you. I will leave these flyers for the SDARC. Chapter meeting coming up. And if you have no questions, that completes my report.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Okay, with that, we'll start with the director's attendance report. Randy, you want to go over?
Self Conveyance Finance Authority, and we continue to add board members to that as different agencies approve their involvement with the project. So that's been good. We did hire general counsel, a gentleman by the name of Steve O'Neill. So we'll look forward to his participation there. Standing committee meetings, January 22nd. I've missed those meetings. I was felt obligated to personally inspect the snowpack in Utah. So
sure.
It
was productive. Okay. All right, Director Slauson.
Yes, I have to report the RCCD Foundation board meeting on January 22nd. It was a regular board meeting, although we did help hold it at the Moreno Valley campus, and there was a presentation by the new president of that campus. I had an update with the general manager on the 28th. That went fine, so I was good to hear kind of more detail on some of the issues facing the district. On the 23rd, going back, I attended Wake Up Chamber breakfast, monthly breakfast, and there were updates from the council and the school board. It was sponsored by Lifestream. This past Friday, I attended the chamber dinner, the citizen of the, it's the annual installation dinner. The citizen of the year was Ido Benzivi, and I had a good conversation with new supervisor Jeff Hewitt. and Marion was there as well, sort of a keynote speaker. That was great. I did not attend WRCOG this past Monday. And I did attend last night with Roxanne, City of Moreno Valley Council meeting, where they had a presentation and Eastern was recognized for handing out bottled water. And it was good. Roxanne did a great job.
Thank you. All right.
I got nothing. I'm here today.
You're here today. Well, I think that's a plus. So, anyway, I did attend the Rural Menifee Groundwater Conditions Overview with all the residents out there that their wells are drying up. That was an interesting meeting that day. And an update with the general manager on the 23rd, going over a number of things here that affects the district. I did attend the Menifee Mayor's Stakeholder Roundtable on the 24th, which kind of showed where some of the economic development's coming from, and I did get a chance to stand up and say that, you know, probably a third of our hookups are actually coming from the Menifee area, and that was... There's a lot of development in the area between Menifee and the French Valley. I did attend the state legislative meeting with Paul and Danielle and Jolene. Talk about the agenda basically was the water tax and an agreement on how we can fund it without a tax. Attended the BIA economic forecast, which I thought was extremely interesting. Everybody says there's a downturn. The downturn happens to be in Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego, not necessarily in the Inland Empire. And that they had projected that 2019-2020, that this area would probably only see a 1.3% decrease from what's been going on. So it was kind of positive. The Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority meeting yesterday, we just went over, we accepted the appointment of Katie, I can't remember Katie's last name, it was a new commissioner, Katie Parker from IEUA, she's seems to be a very engaged lady, which I think is real positive. And we also went over, I can't remember. Oh, yeah, we're going to make some improvements to the building. There hadn't been any improvements to that building in probably 25 years.
And it shows.
And so we're going to authorize some upgrades, and so I think Nick is going to make a call to Rich to see if we can't upgrade something. So,
talk to Rich.
Okay. All right. And this morning at 8 o'clock, I, along with Amanda, hosted the Menifee Chamber of Commerce Wake Up meeting, which happens once a month. Tells about some of the things that go on in the district and what EMWD, since we're the host, we're able to talk about EMWD's contribution to the city of Menifee. And that's all I have. And today, Mr. Council, we have no reason for a closed session today.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And with that, then, I'd just like to say we'd like to remember Kevin Pearson and the obvious pain that he's going through now by losing his wife. And so, you know, we can just have a remembrance of his wife and Kevin during this time of his trial of life. So with that, we'll adjourn the meeting to a regular meeting on Wednesday, February the 20th at 9 a.m. Thank you.